Good morning. I'm Marty Derlin with the KVNF News for Friday, August 23rd, 2013. The Denver Post reports that comments made by a Colorado Republican state senator drew criticism and shock from fellow lawmakers on Wednesday. According to the Post, Senator Vicky Marble of Fort Collins made the remarks during a discussion on poverty and diet, irking some of her fellow members of the Economic Opportunity Poverty Reduction Task Force. In discussing life expectancy and health problems prevalent in African American populations, Marble said diabetes is often prevalent in Black Americans' genetic makeup. Then she proceeded to say, quote, "I've got to say I've never had better barbecue and better chicken and ate better in my life than when you go down south. Everybody loves it." Marble also claimed that Mexicans generally eat healthfully until they immigrate to the United States. Two Democrats on the committee, Senator John Kafalas of Fort Collins and Representative Rhonda Fields of Aurora, said the comments reinforced stereotypes, but were also simply inaccurate. Fields, who is Black, told Marble that she was offended and she refused to engage in the conversation and would, quote, "not tolerate the references to African Americans and chicken." Marble later released a statement meaning her remarks were not meant to be offensive to any community and expressed her sadness that they were taken that way, saying also that she takes her job seriously and hopes the committee's work will offer real solutions for poverty-stricken people. The legal battle continues in the case of New York-based reporter Jana Winter, who was subpoenaed by the state of Colorado in an effort to reveal her source for an article on Aurora Theater shooting suspect James Holmes. The Associated Press reports an attorney for Winter on Wednesday asked New York's highest court to reject the subpoena. Colorado needs New York's approval to enforce the move, and so far, two lower New York courts have upheld it. The state of Colorado is seeking to reveal Winter's source for information that Holmes sent violent drawings to a psychiatrist. Holmes' attorneys claimed the story violated a gag order and said officials who previously denied being Winter's source might have lied. Defense attorneys say that would undermine their credibility as witnesses. This fall, voters across Colorado will decide how recreational marijuana should be taxed. The state legislator referred a special sales tax and an excise tax to the ballot. As Benta Berkland reports, while the initiative has broad support, there are some who worry that it goes too far.
Taxing recreational marijuana was a key part of the campaign to legalize the drug, and when voters legalized it, they also agreed to a 15% excise tax to be passed at a later date.
We are going to be fulfilling our commitment to 55% of Colorado voters who voted in favor of Amendment 64.
That's Joe Megacy. He's the spokesman for the Yes on Initiative AA campaign. The excise tax will apply to marijuana wholesalers, and the first chunk of money is slated to be spent repairing dilapidated public school buildings. Megacy says the marijuana industry is on board.
Most marijuana business owners realize that, since we're dealing with a product that is illegal in every state except two nationwide, there's an extra burden to adequately fund enforcement.
The owners of pot businesses also want to show regulators they're serious and want to be taxed, just like everyone else. Last legislative session, state lawmakers tacked on a 10% sales tax on top of the excise tax. Michael Elliott is with the Medical Marijuana Industry Group. He says he thinks the entire package of taxes is balanced.
We think it's a fair way to go. It's a reasonable way to go forward to make this program work, and we're certainly in a unique place here.
The sales tax would only apply to recreational marijuana and not medical marijuana sales. But not everyone thinks more money in the system will make regulations work. Jessica LaRue owns Twirling Hippie Confections in Denver. She doesn't support the sales tax and hopes people continue using medical marijuana so they can avoid paying it.
Screw the state. They've done a horrible job administrating this system. Why should we pay them a penny more in taxes? All they've done is be corrupt.
LaRue was referring to an audit earlier this year that blasted state regulators for mismanaging money and failing to track and oversee medical marijuana operations. Terry Robnett with the Cannabis Patients Action Network says she doesn't think the state is up to the job.
I think a lot of the issues that they've run into with enforcement comes from poor allocation of the funds that they received. I'm questioning how smart it is to hand them a whole bunch more money.
Robnett also doesn't like the precedent the tax would set. As written, the measure would give lawmakers the ability to raise the sales tax rate up to 15%.
What we say is it's 10% and trust us, that we're not going to raise it. They've now shown the rest of the state how to get around Tabor, because they didn't want to have to go back to the voters.
For others, the tax issue is another way of gouging the customer. Attorney Rachel Gillette heads Colorado Normal, a group that represents consumers. She notes that some local communities, such as Denver and Boulder, are putting their own special sales taxes on the ballot,
which may make the cost to the consumer just too high, and which defeats the purpose of regulation because it ultimately supports a black market.
The state says it's trying to learn from past mistakes and believes it will have a robust regulatory structure in place. Kevin Balmer is with the Colorado Municipal League, which represents cities and towns. He says local communities can't do it on their own.
Because individual municipalities and individual counties can't be equipped to track seed to sale and things like that. So the state has to be properly funded.
And despite various concerns, backers of the tax campaign expect the measure to easily pass. The statewide taxes are just one step as the January 1st date for the legal sale of recreational marijuana gets closer. I'm Benta Berkland at the state capitol.
According to the Delta County Independent, tight budgets have led to less work hours for some Delta County Health Department employees. The Independent reports that the reductions have been spread across five positions. Two employees for the county's Women, Infant, and Children's Program, or WIC, have seen fewer hours due to cuts in the program's federal funding. Federal and state funding cuts have led to less work for one public health nurse. Two Environmental Health Department employees have seen their hours cut due to a slow economy and other factors. Despite the cuts, the county's Human Resources Department said those employees won't suffer any losses in their health care benefits. Unlike other western states, Colorado's moose population is growing. It's healthier than ever, with an estimated 2,300 moose across the state. While other states are grappling with why their herds are shrinking, Colorado is studying the population's fast growth. Aspen Public Radio's Marcy Krivenin has more.
Onda Arroyos Smalls has lived in the Aspen area for over a decade, but it was just recently that she saw a moose.
My first moose sighting was about 2 years ago in the summertime with my kids up at the Maroon Lake.
She says a female moose or cow was bathing in the lake with two of her calves.
It was totally cool because they look so funny. I think they're just a funny looking animal with the long face, and they're just gangly legs because the legs seem so skinny for how big they are.
Royce Smalls is one of a growing number of people glimpsing moose in Colorado. A quick search on YouTube for moose at the Maroon Bells brings up several entries, like this one dated June of 2011.
You see the whites of her eyes. Oh, she's eating water plants.
It's like algae or something.
Yeah.
We could use her in our pond at home, that's for sure.
Moose populations in Colorado are one of our success stories. Moose populations have been increasing pretty steadily in this state.
Brad Petch with Colorado Parks and Wildlife helps manage moose in the northwestern part of the state. It's unclear whether moose are native to Colorado. Moose were first introduced in the 1970s. Since then, their growth has exceeded expectations.
To some extent, it's taken us a little bit by surprise. At least a couple of our more recent transplants have reached the objective we want to maintain very quickly, much more quickly than we anticipated.
Part of the reason moose are multiplying quickly is because of habitats in good condition and favorable weather. It's not the case in other parts of the country.
Minnesota's moose population has dropped by 35% in the past year.
Minnesota Public Radio reports the moose population there dropped so steeply moose hunting season was canceled this year. Climate change, disease, parasites, and a changing habitat have been cited as possible reasons for the decline. Meanwhile, in the Rocky Mountain West, Montana and Wyoming have also seen shrinking numbers of moose. One herd in southwestern Colorado has seen a lower rate of growth relative to the more northern herds, but overall, Colorado is escaping the trend of declining moose. Kevin Wright hikes up a trail in the Maroon Valley outside of Aspen, where he saw a moose. He manages wildlife in the Aspen area for Parks and Wildlife.
Yeah, I was on horseback, so I was actually fairly close. I'd probably say within 50 yards, and we just stopped and held our ground and just stayed real still. And she just kind of came up and kind of looked at us and came up and then stood in the middle of the trail and looked at us and then just wandered off up back up into the trees.
In the Maroon Valley alone, about 5 moose forage on grass and take shade in spruce fir forests. Wright estimates between 20 and 30 moose have made their way into the Roaring Fork Valley. With more moose comes more problems, says Wright. People often get too close.
What we have trouble with is everybody trying to get closer and closer and closer to get that photograph opportunity, and that's the worst thing in the world you can do. If you get too close, especially with the cow with the calf, she'll pin her ears back and she'll charge.
In June, a woman was charged by a moose in Grand Lake. She was walking her dog and got as close as 10 feet from the moose and its calf. Wright says people should keep such incidents in mind because the moose don't appear to be going away anytime soon. For Aspen Public Radio News, I'm Marcy Krivenin.
All around Colorado, new collaborations are emerging around water storage and water use. Partnerships with reservoirs are turning out to be key in terms of environmental stewardship, river protection, and healthy communities that rely on water. As part of the year-long series Connecting the Drops, KGNU's Maeve Conran looks at some of these collaborations that have produced tangible results.
The Alamosa River in south-central Colorado flows east from the San Juan Mountains toward the mighty Rio Grande. It provides valuable irrigation water for farms in this part of the San Luis Valley, and it's finally recovering after severe contamination more than 20 years ago. That's when the nearby Summitville gold mine dumped copper and other heavy metals into the river, killing fish and poisoning irrigation water. Now the rainbow trout are back, and farmers are again drawing from the river to water their crops. The river flow peaks in late spring, but come late fall, it starts to go dry.
This is a seasonal river. This is a seasonal river, and people have a hard time understanding that.
That's Cindy Medina with the Alamosa Riverkeepers, a local group working to improve water quality and quantity in the river. Thanks to a new partnership, the River Keepers will now see more water in the Alamosa by utilizing currently empty space in a nearby reservoir.
We have a unique collaboration as an environmental organization with Terrace Irrigation Company, where we'll be using that 2,000 acre feet for storage for an in-stream flow on the Alamosa River.
The Terrace Reservoir faces a capacity restriction from the state due to an outdated spillway. That's an overflow system necessary in case a big storm dumps too much water in the reservoir. But Medina says funds from the Summitville contamination are helping to solve that problem.
There was a natural resource damage settlement because of Summitville. And so they put $5 million in a trust fund for projects for the Alamosa River watershed.
Rod Reinhardt with the Terrace Reservoir says that was key to creating this partnership.
With the natural resource damage money and the Colorado Water Conservation Board and several agencies working together, we got the money to build the spillway.
In return, Terrace is putting 2,000 acre feet of water back in the Alamosa River during that critically dry period of late fall, helping the river flow longer and further. Reinhardt says this type of multi-agency approach is the way forward as it benefits all parties.
I think we need to maximize the use of all our reservoirs that we can, and it just takes this innovative thinking to try to maximize it and try to solve the problems that we do have.
Similar strategies have been successful in other parts of the state. Zach Smith is an attorney with the Colorado Water Trust.
So in 2012, the snowpack throughout the entire state was looking so bad. And I think it was in May that snowpack levels were down to like 5% of normal.
The Yampa River in northwest Colorado was experiencing significantly reduced water levels. This meant less water running through Steamboat Springs, impacting fishing, tubing, and kayaking. This, in turn, had an impact on local economies. In addition, a low flow rate meant rising water temperatures, affecting native fish. The Colorado Water Trust buys water rights to restore stream flows throughout the state. Last summer, Smith says they found a local reservoir which would sell them the water needed to help restore the Yampa.
We bought the entire 4,000 acre feet last year for $140,000 and then worked with the fisheries biologist to determine at what rate we should release that water downstream.
Those strategically timed releases then benefited stream flows, aquatic habitat, recreation in the city of Steamboat Springs, and even hydropower generation. Smith says efforts like this are happening around the state.
I think there's a future for these multi-entity, multi-purpose water transactions where you get several benefits out of every drop. And if predictions are come true and there's in fact less water in the state, then we do need to get more benefit out of each drop.
It's that type of collaboration that many water managers are working toward. Smith cites a 2008 partnership between East and West Slope water providers that helped improve stream flow in the Colorado River as another successful example. And with most of the state's rivers under stress from persistent drought, exploring new ways to increase in-stream flow seems to be one way forward. For Rocky Mountain Community Radio's Connecting the Drops, I'm Maeve Conran.
Connecting the Drops is a year-long collaboration between Rocky Mountain Community Radio Stations and the Colorado Foundation for Water Education. Find out more at yourwatercolorado.org.
And that's the end of our newscast for today. For KVNF, I'm Marty Derlin. Thanks for listening.